First communicator, Stephen Ward. Second communicator, Leslie Flint's guide, Mickey.
This sound was recorded on October the 28th, 1964, medium Leslie Flint.
Hello, Rosie. You pink of the flowers.
What do you think?
Pink of the flowers, I thought you said.
Flowers, yes. Would you like us to have flowers?
I love flowers.
What is your favourite flower?
Oh, goodness me. Have I got a favourite? I suppose everyone has. I like all flowers, actually. I'm very fond of roses, of course, but then most people are. But I wouldn't say it's exactly my favourite flower. I like the simple flowers, too.
You do?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so do I.
Things like primroses and the spring flowers, particularly, I like.
Yes.
I love to see, or used to like to see, the spring flowers, the countryside. Not that I was a great fan of the countryside, but
yeah.
I always appreciated it, although I spent little time in it.
Oh, yes.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Sorry to be such a long time.
Well, it's all right, doesn't matter, as long as you've come back.
I had a very interesting experience which I didn't exactly seek of my own accord, but which was suggested to me would be a very interesting experience and a very illuminating one.
Yes.
So I was asked if I'd like to visit a certain place,
yes,
which I was told previously wouldn't be altogether pleasant to experience, but nevertheless would be interesting and also would help me to see how important the work could be and would be to help others who were in a pretty bad condition.
Yes.
So I was told not to be unduly disturbed or alarmed or even upset about it, but to accept it as an experience and to realize that the people concerned were going through a particular phase in their evolution which was essentially necessary, which they themselves had brought on by their own sort of being when on earth particularly.
Yes.
And it was very much stressed to me that this condition was only a very temporary one, because the majority of people concerned soon began themselves to strive and to make the change within themselves that would make it possible for them to leave that condition.
Yes.
Anyway, to cut long story short, I went with three other people. One man who I had known, or rather met, over here when I first came, who was a great help to me, and also Dr. Marshall, he came too, and also another person who I'd never met before, but who was a friend of the first person who I told you about.
Oh, yes.
And anyway, at first I was told that I was to try to completely make my mind a blank, which seemed odd, but still, I can only tell you what I was expected to do. In other words, I was to mentally completely relax myself and not to concentrate or think about anything or anyone, but in other words, just to sort of release myself from the present circumstance or condition in which I was. In other words, to try to make myself, as it were, completely oblivious, even of my companions. All this seemed very odd, but evidently it's a lesson, or it's a method which is applied or used,
yes,
which later comes naturally to one, but which for me was an experiment, of course, and a new experience. Anyway, I did it as I was told. Yes, I managed it. And the next thing I remember was a feeling of tremendous lightness and a feeling of being uplifted into space. And that which had been solid under my feet, which was the ground to me, seemed to recede and I seem to feel as if I were floating in the air. The only way I can put this, it is as if I was floating over the tops of houses and buildings and trees and countryside. As I was going through space, and I seemed to be getting higher and higher, and everything was receding into the background, so it seemed that I gradually, as I got higher, as so it seemed, I began to lose consciousness, I began to lose myself.
Okay.
And the next thing I remember, which obviously was descending, because I had the realization that I was being pulled downwards, and gradually, as I was coming lower and lower, so it began to get darker, more murky, and more depressing. The feeling was cold and clammy and odd and unreal and distasteful. And I thought, well, I was warned that the conditions were going to be rather depressing and so on, so I mustn't become unduly concerned or alarmed about it. Fortunately, my companions were beside me, and I could feel them rather than see them, I suppose would be the more correct thing to say. I sensed that they were there, and there was a feeling of reassurance coming from them. It wasn't that they said anything, but it was a sort of feeling that I had, that as I began to descend into this condition, so there was this warmth coming from them, reassurance and goodwill, and it sort of counterbalanced and helped me to overcome the nausea that I began to feel. Because as I seemed to come nearer to this atmosphere, it's the only thing I can call it, so I became more and more conscious of it. And then gradually came into view what looked a mountainous sort of country. There seemed to be tremendous craters and tremendous mountains, and although it was dim, I could gradually perceive, as I drew closer, what appeared to be sort of huts or houses.
Yes.
But they seemed, as I drew very near to them, very dull and very depressing. They looked as if they were built of, I don't quite know, mud and some substance. Anyway, when I had reached, or should I say, when I came to feel the ground under my feet, and I found myself on the sort of slope of the mountain, and my companions then became visible to me, and I could sense what they were saying rather than hear what they were saying. And they said, well, now we're going down into this valley. Now what you see and what you experience, not to allow it to make you unhappy or unduly distressed, because this is a certain condition or place which is one of the lowest conditions or spheres or part of the sphere to our knowledge, and I want you to not be alarmed even at the attitude that some of the peoples may adopt when they see us.
Yes.
Because they may be hostile, they may be very unpleasant.
Yes.
And don't be surprised should you see among some of these people any faces or that may seem familiar or recognizable to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a reason, quite apart from a personal one, that we've brought you here, you see.
Yes.
But anyway, we've descended this mountainside, and I can only say that this seemed to me, for the first time since I've been here, a tremendous effort. For the first time it seemed that it was as if I was back in a sense on earth, that is from the point of view of the physical aspect of it. I felt that there was the effort that was necessary to walk or to descend down this rather difficult decline. And gradually, as we got lower, things became even much more clearly into focus, and I could see that there was a dim form of lighting. It was not an any form of artificial lighting. I mean, it was not by what I suppose you could say electricity, anything like that, obviously, but there was a sort of glow, but it was this peculiar luminosity, but gradually I can begin to pick out things and places. I mean, I could see these houses, they'd now become much more in focus, and I could see that they were, all I could see is that they were hovels. They were dark and depressing and heavy looking. They looked as if they could have been built of clay or mud with a kind of strawy matter or material or substance. It was almost, one might say, as if one had gone into some sort of jungle, African jungle place, where they built out of the mud and wattle or whatever it is. Anyway, as I walked with my companions, on either side of me I began to see, I suppose you can call them human beings, but they were people, all right, but they looked unkempt, unwashed, looked filthy, dirty. And there were quite a lot of men and women, and they were unclothed. A few had a few rags and tatters, it's true, but the vast majority were unclothed. And they didn't seem human to me. They seemed to me more like animals. And this was all, as I expected, from what I'd been told previously, very depressing, because these people seemed to be a completely lost people. It was almost, quite frankly, as if you'd suddenly come into a sort of clearing of a jungle or something in darkest Africa and found an ancient tribe of people who'd never seen civilization and who lived in the most primitive way. It's the nearest thing you can say that it was like. And some of these people, when they saw us, shaking their fists at us and talking, at least I presume they were, they're opening and closing their mouths, and I couldn't actually hear anything, but I could sense the feeling of hostility and the feeling of ill will and dislike. And some people, as we went, spat at us, and some threw what presumably were stones, but they never seemed to have any effect on us. They certainly didn't feel anything hit me, but I could see things were being thrown. Anyway, we went a little further, followed by a large number of these people, until we came to, presumably, what was, for this place anyway, the most palatial, at least it was the only place that you could say that looked as if it had any sort of interest taken in it. At least it looked better than the rest, it looked cleaner, it looked somehow as if, well, someone had taken some interest. And on the threshold of this place was the most extraordinary looking creature. He was a man, I think about 6'3" or 6'4", very broad, big boned, looked very, I suppose, in a sense you might say, almost healthy in comparison to some of these other people. And he had a longish beard and a moustache and a very hooked nose, very dark, piercing eyes, and long hair to his shoulders. He looked like some sort of strange hermit type of man. He was dressed in what appeared to me to be some kind of robe. I don't know whether you could call it a robe. It certainly wasn't a beautiful robe, but it was certainly something which you could say was a robe, inasmuch that it was long, and it was girdled with a sort of cord at the waist, and he had some sort of a staff. It wasn't a stick exactly, but it had some figure fitted on the top of it, which, I don't know what kind of figure it was or what it was supposed to represent, but it looked very much like an animal's head, but couldn't say what animal, but probably it wasn't all that important. Anyway, he saw us coming towards him with all this crowd of people. And he seemed, much to my surprise, after the reception we had from the rest, he seemed, I thought, very affable, very friendly, and almost as indeed to me, he seemed fawning and very sincere. I had this feeling coming from him of insincerity, but he seemed to be putting up tremendous shows, anyway I can explain this, of trying to be pleasant and impressive. And anyway, we were invited into this place. And I must say the interior was very well furnished. The furniture was in a sense peculiar. It didn't seem to fit at all, but at the same time it was presentable. In fact, some of it was quite, I would have said, quite attractive and elegant, in fact. But it seemed a most odd assortment. There seemed to be pieces of furniture that came from one century and pieces that seemed to come from another. It seemed to be a most peculiar hodgepodge. And there were several women there who evidently were waiting on him, is the only way I can put it, because they waited on us, because he ordered them, presumably, to go and fetch, presumably, something to eat and drink, because that's what arrived, anyway. Mm. And out of these sort of peculiar-shaped dishes, we had, I don't know, called it soup, if you like, but anyway, it was completely tasteless to me, and I presume it was therefore tasteless to my companions. And then we had what appeared to be fruit. Certainly it had all the appearance of fruit, except that it didn't seem to have the bright, healthy colour that you'd expect good fruit to have, but it was it certainly looked like fruit. Anyway, it was fruit, inasmuch as it had the shape and to some extent the colouring. Yeah. This all seemed completely tasteless to me. It seemed to have no substance, no nothing. But whether he could see this in a different way to me, I wouldn't know. But anyway, he seemed most affable, most friendly. And then my companions, for the first time, I heard them speaking. Previously, I'd only been conscious of what they were trying to convey, as far as I was bursting about. And they were saying to him that he should endeavour to change himself, so that his influence would be felt upon the rest of the people there.
Yes.
Because his influence and his outlook was affecting these people and preventing them from making any sort of progress. At this he was sort of very jocular, and he sort of laughed, and he said, "Oh, you haven't come to preach to me again." He said, "You haven't come here to tell me all this again, surely. Why do you bother when you can see for yourself that we are perfectly happy, we have our own way of life, they accept me as their leader, and I certainly treat them well, I don't expect them to do anything at all. In fact, they're absolutely free here, they don't have any rules or regulations, they're not restricted in any way, they have their own way of life, leave them alone. Why don't you leave us alone? Why don't you leave me alone? You're just wasting your time," or worse, this effect. Well, of course, all this was very intriguing, but it was quite obvious that I hadn't seen by any means the worst. In fact, in some senses, I'd only seen the facade. Admittedly, the reception we had from some of the people wasn't very pleasant, but it wasn't exactly all that hostile, except from a few odd ones here and there who would have thrown, presumably, stones. But listening to this man, who seemed to be the leader, struck me, the whole thing struck me as so odd, so peculiar. I felt uncomfortable. I felt that I didn't particularly want to stay any length of time there, and I hoped we wouldn't stay too long, and that we'd be glad to get out of it. But I realized that I'd been brought for this purpose, that perhaps in some way they'd even thought, my companions, that it would be helpful to me, I suppose, in the sense of realizing, looking back on it, it was. But I must say I wasn't happy about it, and I certainly have no desire to return to it. But anyway, it turns out that this man was a man who had great power and great authority over a number of people during his earthly lifetime. He was a man who presumably was able to sway people by the power of his will, and unfortunately his will and his power was used in obviously the wrong direction. In other words, these people were quite happy to be, in a sense, you might say, almost slaves to him. Mm. He had a strange kind of power of his own. At first I was curious, because I couldn't see what there was there for anyone to want to stay there, or what power this man could possibly have. But it was obvious by the deference which everyone treated him that he had greater authority. And presumably, what I was seeing was only a very small part of his, I was going to use the word kingdom, but certainly his place.
Yes.
And I still couldn't see the point of my being taken there. And at the time I was so distressed too, because it seemed to me so pointless and so useless to go there, because it was obvious that these people in their own strange way were quite happy, quite content to be as they were, and that what we would call, or what I experienced, or what I thought was dimness, wasn't necessarily dimness to them, that it was all a matter of degree, and that they were, in their own fashion, perfectly happy, and they were quite content to live in that sort of state in which they were. Of course, I realized too that a lot of these people had got very strong views. First, this wasn't very apparent to me, but gradually dawned on me that these people had very strong ideas, very strong views, and that they very sincerely believed that their way of life and their outlook was infinitely, presumably, superior to anyone else's. They were as firm and fixed in their idea of views, and particularly their leader, as others that I've met here of a different caliber altogether, who are in a much higher state of being. It all seemed so odd, and I just couldn't fathom it out at all, because I can't say that it was an evil atmosphere, and yet at the same time, to me, this is decidedly unpleasant one. I couldn't see what happiness or pleasure there could be for any of these people to live in darkness, or what I would call darkness, but then again, as I say, it may not have been darkness to them, but it all seems so utterly distressing and unpleasant. And anyway, my companion spoke to this man and said, well, until you change, a lot of these people will not change. And until you set an example, there will be little hope for many of these people to release themselves from this dreadful atmosphere and condition to which you are all subject. But then again, as I said, this man, he just laughed, and he said, but you're stupid from the point of view of thinking that we're not happy, because we're all perfectly happy. No one here is ordered to do anything. Everyone here works together in their own fashion, in their own way. They don't want to do anything, and most of them don't. Then why should they be tried to force to become or to do something which they're not? In other words, they're content to be as they are. You call us lazy, you call us underdeveloped, you call us this and that. But why should we change when we are as we are, content? We don't do anyone any harm, we don't interfere with anyone else, we live in our own way, according to our own thinking. We don't come and interfere with you. And we have no desire whatsoever to change. And all this seemed to me, in a sense, rather pointless. I felt all this is, in a sense, a wasted mission, because it's quite obvious that we weren't going to have any effect on him at all. And all this I found very distressing, and in a sense I was bewildered why my companions should have decided to bring me to this very depressing place, because I couldn't see that I could do any good. If they couldn't, I was more helpless than them. Anyway, after a little time we sat, I suppose you can say, chin wagging was about as near as you can get to it. And our host, if you I said that's what he was, he said that he would take us and show us. Yes. Presumably, I thought he was going to say, show us the town. I thought I'd seen enough of what I'd already seen, and I wanted to see any more of it. But by this time I was getting a bit irritable, I'm afraid, quite frankly, and I felt this was all rather stupid. Because I felt so pointlessly, I felt it all so helpless. And,
yes.
But anyway, I thought, well, here goes, I committed myself to this, and I was told not to be unduly depressed. But I actually, strangely now, I know it's a shocking thing to admit now, it wasn't so much I was depressed, I was irritated with the whole business. I thought, well, these stupid people, anyone with any common sense would realize this is no way of life at all, and they should want to get out of this without having to have people come and tell them to get out of it. Anyway, we went out of this house, and we went further afield. At least we went what appeared to me to be along a steep incline, a hill, but a road that, well, if you can call it a road, on each side there were houses. The other thing I noticed, there seemed to be no vegetation, there seemed to be no trees, no flowers. In fact, to me it was so utterly depressing, but anyway, we walked along this road, and gradually, as we climbed higher on this path, on this road, it seemed to get lighter and lighter, and we seemed to come into what was obviously some form of countryside, although in comparison to countryside as you know, for instance, it wouldn't be called countryside, but it was certainly more like country. There were some trees, but they were very dismal, pathetic rather, I thought. It didn't seem to have much foliage, and they seemed to be rather twisted and warped. And there was attempt, presumably, of grass growing, and it looked as if, how can I put it, it looked like countryside that once had been, that had declined and decayed and become twisted. It was probably what you might expect a countryside to look like after a battle.
Mm.
And everything seemed twisted and unhappy and depressing, but it was certainly something after what we'd already seen. Anyway, we walked further, and as we walked further, as I said, it seemed to get lighter. And here and there seemed to be a small tree springing up and giving forth some life, some buds. And all this seemed puzzling to me, what point there was in us coming this far and to see so little. Anyway, eventually we reached what was a bridge. Anyway, I can describe it because it was a bridge, inasmuch as it was a means of getting from one side of a river to another. And as we reached this bridge, the old man turned to my companions and said, "Well, this is where I'm going to leave you. I'm not going any further across this bridge." And I couldn't see the point, but anyway, he said that he had no intention of crossing the bridge, and that was the limit, and he did not wish to go any further. But if we wished, we could go. But he said that he had no desire himself to visit what lay ahead. Anyway, I thought, well, I don't know, all this is so stupid. What is it that lies ahead? Now, my curiosity was aroused to the extent that I thought, well, whatever happens, if it's possible, I'm going over that bridge to see for myself. Why is it this old man is so loath to go any further? And it's pretty obvious that my companions wanted this man to go across this bridge, and he was adamant he wasn't going across this bridge, and yet he himself had led us to this bridge. It just didn't make sense. Why should he come so far and expect us to cross and not himself? Anyway, we said goodbye and we walked across this bridge. And as we reached the other side and looked back, I could see this old man standing there, leaning on this stick, if anything I can call it.
Yes.
And he, although the distance was vast, at least I suppose it was vast inasmuch as it seemed a long way to me, I could see him in the distance leaning on this stick. And although I couldn't see the expression on his face, it was too far, I could feel something, and I felt that it was a feeling of relief. At first I thought this feeling of relief was my own, which in a sense it was, but it was another feeling of relief that I was picking up obviously from him. He was obviously glad that we'd departed, that we'd left. Anyway, we walked on, and very soon everything changed. Everywhere around me seemed to be illuminated by what, I won't say it was the sun, but it was similar in as much that everywhere there seemed to be lightness and air and freshness. There seemed to be loveliness everywhere, trees, birds, many animals, different types of animals, yet everything seemed to be so changed, so friendly, so lovely, so light, so airy. And I thought, well, why is it? Why is it that this old man and his companions, who have the bridge almost outside their own city, if you can call it that, and they know the route to it, are afraid or will not carry across the bridge to the other side. They will not, in other words, take the plunge or seek out the adventure of it all. You know, it seems so awful that people could be so dead that they could live in that atmosphere, in that condition, and not want even out of curiosity to see what lay on the other side. And I couldn't help, I suppose in a sense I was thinking this so intensely with myself, and my companions must have known what I was feeling, because I distinctly heard the voice again of my companion, one of my companions, saying to me, "Well, this is why we have brought you here. This is an experience that we've had before. You may think that bringing you down into this environment, or at least the environment we've just left, was a pointless, wasted effort, and you can see no reason or sense in it. But then again, we wanted you to see how people can, because of their blindness to realities, who are content to dwell in a state of mind and of gloom, which they accept and find in it a strange form of their own happiness, and yet on their very threshold is a bridge, a way, in which they can reach something so much better. We ourselves have been there several times deliberately, that we might try and persuade the old man to go, come with us over the bridge, because once we had got him over the bridge, I'm sure then that the rest would have followed, because he is their leader, they accept him, they follow him. What he says to them is law. They cannot see any further than this old man. And therefore, if ever we can get him to come with us over the bridge, the rest will eventually follow. This is only a small part of a certain aspect of life here, where people dwell in communities according to their individual and collective outlooks or condition of thought. These people dwell in a very low mental state. They're not evil people, they're not bad people, they're just rather stupid people. And these people accept the fact that they must have a leader, they accept the fact that they must have someone who will think for them and act for them and do for them. And as long as they have the things that they want, which are quite primitive, because these people in a sense are primitive, although they come from various races, they're not necessarily all one people, the one race of people. But this man has been chosen by them to be their leader. And they have, many of them, been there for a very long time, as you term time. But one day, eventually, some of the individuals, quite apart from the leader, even if the leader himself doesn't cross the bridge, here and there, in fact, there have been a few odd ones who had ventured of their own accord, who started to think for themselves and beginning to wonder what it is that they are lacking or missing and what could be across the other side of the bridge. You see, in a sense, this is symbolic, and yet it is a reality. Symbolism and reality can go hand in hand over here. They have a symbolism has a greater reality than people realize. We talk about things being symbols, but behind many symbols is a great reality. And these people are living in a world symbolic of themselves and their outlook and their mind. The opportunity is there whenever they wish to take it, to better themselves. But so many people are so blind that they willingly accept what they have begun or to accept for so long, they take it for granted that that is for them and it is good enough for them, and they're happy to a certain extent with it. But one day, there will come the change. You mustn't be depressed because this has been a depressing experience. Of course, mind you, I haven't gone into all the detail, because the certain aspects of it are not very pleasant, and certainly it can't do any good to repeat them. And then again, it seems to me that these people, and I don't like to say this in a sense because it gives a wrong reflection on the animal kingdom, but in some senses they were more like animals than human beings. And they obviously were quite content to live on a very low mental level.
Stephen, if there'd been so many years in that sort of condition, how on earth are they going to get away unless they have another leader like the ones they've got? I mean, not like him, but someone more powerful and stronger to enable this old man to come out of that box.
I know this must be in a sense puzzling, and I'm sorry, but you see, I can only tell you what I've experienced.
Yes, yes.
And that doesn't mean to say that I know the answer or why a certain thing should be. You see, I think you have to sort of, if you can, make a comparison in a material sense.
Yes, yes.
Because you know as well as I do that there are many people who will gather together and form a sect or an organization.
Yes.
Which may be for good or it may be for bad.
Yes.
But sometimes you get parties which develop. I mean, you get parties like the Nazi Party,
yes.
where the fundamental evil is let loose.
Yes.
And the same thing applies in a community like this, although in a sense I can't honestly say that anything I experienced or saw there was particularly evil. But it just seemed to me to be darkness of the mind, is the not being prepared to think, not being able to exert themselves. It seems that they must have been in themselves individually, although they may never have met on earth, they must have been individuals who are very slothful and very sort of, I don't know, sort of people who couldn't have cared less about whether they looked after themselves or not, or whether they looked clean or what they wore. People whose mentality had been dulled for some reason or other, or perhaps never attempted to educate themselves, or probably just was
living life on despair, more or less.
Well, in a sense, yes, in a sense, no, because, for instance, there may be people who had to live a life of despair and live in squalor, but they themselves don't choose it, they're victims of it, and they would like to get out of it and would make the effort if they could. It's rather different. But these people seem to me as if they were people who had no ambition, no desires, completely without desiring to do anything in particular. They seemed more like dead things. I don't know why this should be or what there is that one can do for people like that. It seems to me that they themselves, obviously, as in all instances, I suppose, must make the effort themselves. People can show the way. I mean, for instance, the old man, he obviously knew the way, and obviously many of the people knew the way. They may not have known what was on the other side, as it were, but they knew that it led to something or somewhere, and you'd think that they would have been glad to make the effort, or if only curiosity. But it seemed that so many of these people were content to be as they were.
I wonder if you would have a strong urge to go back there and you yourself try to influence.
Well, I don't know. I can't imagine it because I wouldn't like to feel that I was the sort of person myself who was despairing of uplifting or helping in any way. I think that's wrong to be a defeatist, of course. But I can only say that the feeling that I had there was, well, for me, it's dreadful because I couldn't see how a people could live and be like that without wanting to do something about it. But these people just didn't seem to want to do anything about it. And it seemed to me that the man who was their leader was a person of strong character in a sense. I don't mean that he was necessarily a bad character or a good character. I don't think he was good, that's true, but same time, he was a person who I felt could exert himself. Obviously, in a sense, he had, but he just did not want anything more than what he had. He was content. Whether it is that it is bad to be content, I mean, I suppose in a sense, contentment is a bad thing, and yet in a sense it can be a good thing, but in this case it was obviously a bad thing, that they should want to get out of that environment. Of course, The others tell me that they will. But time being nothing, in a sense, to us. In a way, perhaps, I wouldn't say it doesn't matter, but it does matter very much. But it seems to me that the sensation or the idea of time being, in a sense, non-existent to these people, that once they see the glimmer of light, once they make the effort, then they will eventually rise.
Well, you've seen the same, you find the same thing on the earth.
Yes, I didn't expect to find it here. Mm. I mean, I had any serious thoughts about it at all before I came, but previous to that, I had seen things so differently. At least wherever I had been, it had been pleasant, it had never been unpleasant. It had always been light, not dark, and it had always been, well,
yes.
You know, it was livable.
How took you dark?
Well, I'm still waiting to find out. But I'm told
yes. This
is all part of my experience,
yes. And
although I may not see the point or the purpose of it at the moment, that this, coupled with many other experiences which I'm yet to have and places I'm yet to visit, will eventually make possible for me to be able to, you remember the big building I told you, the steps and so on,
yes,
and I was dying to enter.
Yes.
But when I've gone through these various experiences and visited these various places and reached a certain point, as anybody can put this, in my experience, then I would be ready to go into this place. And there I would receive my instructions. There I would be told what my work was to be and in what way I was to do it. You see, at the moment I have been, more or less, you might say, been given complete freedom, which I appreciate.
Yes.
And I am dying for experience of all kinds, and I'm certainly getting it. And I'm also able to come back here, and I'm very happy to do that. But it's quite evident that sooner or later, and I hope it will be sooner, I should have gone through a certain amount of experience of various kinds, and it will enable me to receive instruction as to what my work will be or what it will consist of. Because I do know that in this vast building,
yes. There
are many great souls, this is what I have been told, who have reached a very high state of evolution, I suppose is the best way of putting it, who don't exactly give orders as such, because no one is ordered here to do anything, but in which you are presented with the opportunity to do certain work which will help others, of course, and also help oneself. Not that one does it for that purpose or reason, but in other words, it is a state of having reached the point when you yourself become, I was going to use a word which sounds awfully religious or something, initiated.
Okay.
In other words, it seems that people do have a form of initiation. I don't know whether there's any ceremony attached to this or anything like that, but all I know is that it is obvious to me, and one can tell immediately with people, at least I can now, whether they have reached a certain degree of development or evolution, or call it what you will, and they have been, as it were, initiated into certain mysteries, I suppose, if you like to put it like that. Or at least they would be mysteries to me because I don't understand them, but not to them. In other words, you pass certain tests. And whether I passed, well, those tests are such as they are that I've had, I wouldn't really like to say. I certainly don't feel I passed any tests with what I've experienced and told you just now, but because, quite frankly, it seems at the time, and still does rather at the moment, rather pointless, but no doubt that has some important factor or part to play in my future. Anyway, if it does, and what it is, I'll explain to you. I've told it very badly because, quite frankly, it's very difficult to depict and describe. And I find, anyway, and so much that I've left unsaid because it seemed pointless to reiterate, to mention it, because, well, I don't think it would help you to understand. I wouldn't I don't think it's helped me particularly, quite frankly, but evidently it has got some part to play in my own evolution.
Oh. Well, you...
Anyway, I don't want you to be depressed about this.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't like you to think this is the place where a lot of people go as a general sort of an atmosphere. This is obviously something very exceptional.
Well, I suppose you just have to see what the place is like. It's not
a anyway, I'm hoping, old dear, that I should also have some very pleasant and happy experiences as well, to tell you.
Oh.
Of course, I have. It's true. I mean, in my own environment, where I am myself, I'm perfectly happy, and the conditions there are vastly different to what I depicted to you in this other place.
Mm.
But it's quite obvious to me that there are so many, many, many different stratas or spheres, or call them what you will, where people live in communities. I never thought of people living in communities as a communal group. I didn't know why, but now I can see that it must be, because obviously people must be utterly different one to another according to their knowledge and experience and their development or their lack of it and their outlook and goodness knows what else. And it's pretty obvious that you do get these different stratas of life.
Mm.
And they are so varied, so interesting.
I think you must be going through now the different starters one by one.
Well, I don't know. I suppose there's something in that, but I'm certainly hoping to be able to find something really exciting to tell you, and something a little bit more pleasant than what I told you today.
Well,
there's no point in telling you all the nice things and not telling you any of the less.
That's quite right.
I mean, you must have sort of the black and white, you must have the picture, and you can't, I don't think anyone can really appreciate anything unless you have the two opposites, or you have the extremes.
Yes.
I suppose the vast majority of us sort of fit somewhere in the middle, but there are these extremes, of course, and the extreme in the bad sense may be unpleasant, but it's necessary to illustrate it, I think, don't you?
Yes, quite right, Stephen. You're going
to... Anyway, I'm going to tell you everything I learned.
Oh, it'd be lovely.
Bit by bit, anyway, old dear.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll have to go now.
And
but
in any case, I hope you soon reach that building. I'm longing.
Yes, well, Emily, that's something which I got to work for, in a way, although I don't feel conscious that I'm doing anything very much and working in any particular direction. All I know is that I'm hoping and certainly doing what I'm told, although in a sense, there again, that's a misnomer, because I'm not told to do anything. And yet, there's the subtlety, you know, honestly, Rose, I said to you that no one gives you any orders, no one gives you any instructions, no one tells you what to do, but somehow you find yourself doing things, and in a way, you suddenly think to yourself, that's odd, I wasn't told I had to do this, I wasn't told to do that. And yet here am I willingly saying or doing, you know, it's as if somehow the power of good is such that automatically you respond to it. It's wonderful, really.
And done very, very softly.
And even when perhaps something is unpleasant, or such as I just told you, which to me was unpleasant, one found oneself willingly doing it. And although one disliked, in a sense, and one's reaction was repugnance, at the same time you felt, well, at least you're glad you did it, but why you did it, or what the purpose was, you probably in this case, you can't see it, but no doubt it will be clarified, and I shall see the reason why, and who knows?
I may be sent
back there to help those people in some way, you see. Anyway, I shall find out, shan't I?
Yes.
Anyway, nothing's going to...
And you tell me?
Yes, and nothing's going to stop me coming to have a nap at the year old day. Doesn't matter if I go to the stars themselves, I'll still come back to the earth to talk to you.
Oh.
Anyway, I must go. And all my love and bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bless you, Steve.
Bye-bye. See you again soon.
What?
See you again soon.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Nicky. Why don't you speak, Nicky? Nicky?
Yes?
Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yes, I've been there too. It's not very nice.
You've been there?
Oh, a long time ago.
He's all puzzled out,
yes? Well, no children there, you know.
No children?
No children at all.
Why did you go there?
I haven't been for a long time, but I did go there a long time ago.
Oh. Oh.
Well, this is Carver had an experience. I think a lot of people go there.
Do they?
Sometimes they're not seen, of course. It's very unusual to be seen when you go there. You're invisible to them.
But he was seen?
Ah, yes, and that was because he went with the right people and it was necessary.
Oh.
Part of his training. I think there's a special reason for him going there. Anyway, we shall find out later, won't we?
Yes,
bye bye.
Interesting, Mickey.
Bye bye.
Bye bye, darling.
Don't be depressed by it. Bye bye.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Very intriguing.
Oh.